Hello, welcome to Tales from the Potting Bench. I'm Adam, a gardener, writer, and podcaster with a passion for hearing people's stories and sharing them with you. Now, before we get into this week's episode, I'd like to ask, if you listen to this podcast and enjoy it, then please consider rating and leaving a review on your podcast platform of choice. It's easy to do, takes a few minutes of your time, but it helps this podcast get into the ears of more like-minded planty people. So, go and do it now and then come back and listen to the rest of the episode. I'm thrilled to say that this podcast continues to be sponsored by the wonderful people at PlantGrow, producers of award-winning organic compost, mulch and fertiliser made with zero chemicals. Great for your garden and even greater for the planet. And I know because it's all I use on my garden at home. Plus, don't forget, if you use the code POTTINGBENCH on plantgrow.co.uk, you'll get 10% off your order. We're now in the sixth season of the podcast, and this time we're doing things slightly differently, as over the course of the coming weeks, we'll be hearing from some of the most interesting women across the UK as I bring them together in what I'm calling a celebration of women and plants. I'm constantly interested by the women around me in the garden world, and it's high time that we're able to bring them together and share their passion with them. So, let's introduce my next guest. Well, in fact, this week's guest really needs no introduction, as when I say her name, you're highly likely to know of her already. Charlotte Howard, otherwise known online as Capability Charlotte, is a garden designer and is also one of Hortweek's 100 most influential women in horticulture. But she's also a staunchly fierce anti-plastic grass campaigner. And in this episode, we discuss the plastic grass phenomenon and much more. Enjoy. So, for anyone who is not familiar with you right now, who are you and what do you do?
Hi, Adam. Well, I'm Charlotte Howard, also known as Capability Charlotte, maverick garden designer and all-round grumpy old woman.
But do you know, I'd forgotten all about the TV show Grumpy Old Women. You'd be great on that, no offence.
Cheers, Adam. Have you been speaking to my husband?
I've just been observing you from a distance. I've seen all that I need to see.
Yeah. You could take me anywhere, but only once, or maybe a second back to go back and apologise.
I think for the first time in six series, I probably need to preface this episode with a slight warning that I think before we've even begun, I feel as though I should probably say that this episode will almost definitely contain swearing and topics of a possible sensitive nature, mainly plastic grass, possibly. Yeah. So.
Yes, and a particular Twitter account.
Yes, well, there you go. Yeah.
Which isn't me.
No. So anyone that's listening now that is has got a nervous disposition, then might not be the episode for you.
Oh, God, my reputation precedes me.
Well, I mean, it does. It absolutely does. And we're going to get into one of the very many facets of what makes Capability Charlotte Capability Charlotte. But I think we've got, let's go back to the start. I think we kind of have to start at your entry to the world of plants. Hey, did you plan to do this? Was this your kind of ambition or?
No, I didn't start out in life wanting to be a lady gardener. I was actually in my 20s, I was a Marilyn Monroe impersonator.
Never were.
Yeah. I was on Doctor Who as well. Yes.
As Marilyn Monroe.
Yes, the Christmas episode with Catherine Jenkins and the Sharks. It's actually the reason why my husband married me.
Is it?
He's a bit of a Doctor Who nerd. Don't bother to watch it because I'm literally a blur in the background, but it was quite exciting.
I'm going to watch it as soon as we finish recording.
So, and I was the world's first female boxing MC, and I was in an appallingly talentless girl band. So I did quite a lot of wild stuff in my 20s. That's the safe for work stuff I did. and then during the day, I worked in fashion retail. That was the sort of what paid the bills. And so I've always been interested in style and colour and fashion and things that are exciting. And somebody in the place I was working left to go to Wiltshire College, Lacombe, to study gardening. And I've always loved it. My mother had a beautiful garden that was open on the National Garden Scheme.
Right.
And she got thrown off the National Garden Scheme as well. Go to my Instagram account for the story. been thrown out of better places than that, she said. And both my parents were self-employed. She was an antique dealer and interior designer, and my father was an architect. So I just was always wanted to be self-employed like them and be able to bugger off to London when at a whim. Well, you
Yeah.
can you? Because you can't afford to when you're self-employed, can you?
No.
You're
No, you
always
cannot.
working.
No.
Anyway, yeah, so at 29, I had a Damascene moment and went to Lacombe. And my mother said, "You'll never see it through." So I did it just to spite her.
Oh,
So I started having a gardening round while I was at Lacombe. And I had a little advert in the local paper that said, "Lady Gardener doesn't take long tea breaks." And I had a stream of little old ladies that I used to look after. And yeah, I've always, but designing was always my passion. And so I did the gardening until I got ill. I've got an illness called ankylosing spondylitis, which means a bit like arthritis with
wow.
muscle pain and joint pain and fatigue. So it got to a point where I could get down and get back up again. So I decided to do a master's degree. That was 7 or 8 years ago now. And yes, and then sort of launched as a full-time designer and consultant. So I don't miss crawling around on my hands and knees, that's for sure now.
Do you not? Do you
Six
find
days
yourself
a
wanting
week.
to get stuck in though during a design?
Well, as in garden, no, not really. I mean, I want to
No.
get stuck in with my own garden. I just it's
Yeah.
looking a right mess out there. It's looking at me and judging me. But no, I seriously, I don't miss it. If I need fresh air, I'll go for a walk. Thanks awfully. Yeah, and I just it is the weather has just got so much worse. I really feel that I kind of left at the right time.
I don't know. There's a real miserableness with the weather that we have at the moment, isn't there? It's
It's
just
just
very,
grim. It
yeah, it
just
is, isn't it?
feels like. So I run the Women in Gardening networking group, or I have been doing for the last 6 years, and so there's nearly 3,500 members in it now. And you know, just listening to some of the women talking about what they have to go through, and a lot of them are single parents. There's you know, single income families, and this is their career. And their money that they earn is dependent on whether it rains or not. I mean, it's just ghastly. I my heart aches for these women, and they're not paid enough. You know, gardening is a severely underrated industry, isn't it? So yeah, I think, yeah, I'm just very, very glad I got out of
Yeah, but you
it.
absolutely love design, though. I mean,
Yes.
you were almost set to do that in a way, that with what your parents did, that such kind of
Yes.
visual, but in different ways, kind of visual
Yeah.
careers that they had.
It's funny, really, because I've never really stuck at a job for more than 4 years, and I'm here I am 20 years later, and I'm still doing the same job, which I never thought I'd do. I mean, obviously, it's a job that can change and develop with you, obviously, as a case in point. I went from maintenance to consultancy and design. But yeah, design is at my core. You know, I've been was brought up looking at historic houses, looking at beautiful antiques and seeing how form and function and how everything should work together. My father was a great lover of Ruskin and the arts and crafts movement. So a lot of that informed my work. So I grew up looking at the work of Lutyens and Jekyll.
So is that just listening to what you're saying about arts and crafts and the styles that you were kind of brought up on? Is that where the Capability Charlotte thing comes from?
Yes, it was sort of funny thing actually. When I was a little girl, my mother always used to say, "Oh, she's Charlotte. She's very capable." I was an only child, and I know you'll find this hard to believe, Adam, but I was quite quiet.
No, I don't believe that. Not for a second.
I really was. I used to take my little coloring book with me everywhere, so I was always drawing and coloring in, and I was always very practical because I was sort of a daddy's girl, so he taught me how to do woodwork and things. So I was always, "Oh, Charlotte, she's very capable. She can do anything." So it was kind of my nickname, and also yes, there's the capability brown as well. So it was a sort of double joke, really. My mother thought of the name, so I have her to thank for
Oh,
that
did she?
one.
And I'm surprised in a way that there aren't any other designers that have adopted kind of similar
No.
monikers from previous designers and gardeners.
Yeah, it's odd. There is a couple of, I think there used to be a business in Bath called Capability Gardening or something,
Right.
but I didn't really mind as long as they didn't get bad reviews. It would reflect on me. I don't know if they're still going, but yeah, I did actually trademark my name last year just in
You?
case. Yes.
Yeah. Are you a fan of Capability Brown?
Oh God, you know, the irony is, no, not really.
No.
He just ripped up whole villages, didn't he? Yeah. Oh gosh, I started out loving formal landscapes. I'm a massive French Revolution fan, and I used to spend quite a lot of time at Versailles, and that's by Le Nôtre, and I used to love sort of formal parterres. But I don't know, Kate Bulish-Brown kind of leaves me a bit cold, really. It's sort of artifice, isn't it? For my master's degree, I had to do an assignment about Corsham Court, which is a very interesting subject because it was started by Kate Bulish-Brown or Lancelot Brown and finished off by Humphrey Repton. And it's quite funny because I went through all the records and read the notes between him and Lord Methuen. And it's basically Lord Methuen moaning about how expensive it is, and Kate Bulish-Brown moaning about Lord Methuen not paying him, and now he's cold and he's got a cough full of like.
Oh my God. Oh dear. Well, I really want to talk about the Women in Gardening yes. Network group. Is that it's called the Women in Gardening Network group? Have I got that right?
The Women in Gardening Networking Group.
Right, yes. Networking
probably
group.
Should have thought of something simpler.
Rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, sisters yeah. are doing it for themselves or something.
But it affectionately is can be shortened to WIGs, can't it?
Yeah, we are the WIGs.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which yeah. I think it's a Facebook group, isn't it, really?
Yes. And so WIG started out because loads of people get, you don't want to call everyone ladies and guys. Mm. So WIGs became the thing because people will get offended, whatever you say. So, but nobody seems to be offended by WIGs. So that is what we've stuck with. Yeah, it started in reaction to another large Facebook group, which I won't mention, where one particular lady was just asking a simple question about bras. And right. a few of the gentlemen and well-respected men in the industry who should have known better made some stupid, childish, facile comments, and it just absolutely boiled my what's it. So I just thought, well, I gotta start my own group. So I did, and I got some friends to join, and then suddenly it snowballed, and it's suddenly getting really busy. I don't know if Facebook algorithms are just now showing yeah. me to everybody, but and we've got women all over the world. We've got Australia, North Carolina, New Zealand, France. So yes, God, it's a very much an international group.
So what is it primarily for any women that haven't heard of it? What is its kind of function?
It's a non-judgmental supportive group for women who are in the world of horticulture. So you can be amateur or professional. You just have to have a shared love for gardening and nature and be a woman, really, or identify as a woman.
I was listening to you on the Underground podcast recently and you were talking about it. And you made a comment which I thought was, and I think is not perhaps what people would necessarily expect someone to say, in that you, if there was a male group of the same ilk, mm-hmm. It's fine. And I think yeah. there's always this assumption, though, isn't there, I think.
But yes, equally, I think men need a safe space. And I think, you know, men's mental health, and particularly men that work outdoors and you know, in gardening and in farming and things like that, the suicide rates are incredibly high. And so actually, you know, we should maybe have somewhere for men to actually talk about their emotions and feelings. They probably won't. They'll probably just share power tools and things like that. But so I'm making sweeping generalizations about
I've
men.
I've just started the men loving power tools networking group on Facebook. So I really need to close that down, don't I? You know, you also told a great story on that podcast about you needing to pee in a garden, and about half an hour later you were stood there. With your trousers around
yeah.
your ankle.
So this is a problem, a perennial problem with women is the al fresco pee. It's you actually become quite a ninja peer. You can knock one out in about 3 seconds if you push hard enough. But anyway, I was doing a ninja wee, and I was a sort of lowish wall, and the neighbour next door sort of pipped. Waved it over the shoulder, over the fence at me or the wall at me, and said hello. And of course, I was midway, and I thought, well, I can't be pulling my trousers up because he'll know I'm pulling them up. So I'll just have to sit there with them around my knees and my arse hanging out, having a conversation about the weather and my pruning. So yeah, so ninja weeing is not all it's made up to be.
Oh,
I do envy men that, I must say.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a problem, is it? Really, for men?
No.
what's the biggest problem for women? I mean, that's such a question, but what do you think is one of the biggest problems for women in horticulture in whatever form they're in?
I'm just trying to think. I'm obviously, the majority of the questions are sort of, you know, how do I prune this and when do I cut this back kind of things. Mm. We have a lot of questions like that. I think there's two big questions. The first one I'll talk about is what they charge. And imposter, and within that comes imposter syndrome.
Sure.
Obviously men have imposter syndrome too, but I think with women it's particularly strong, and disabling the imposter syndrome of women. And probably because we've been brought up to undervalue ourselves and put ourselves second. It's, you know, it's the patriarchy. And that doesn't mean men. Patriarchy is a sort of vague term, because men are just as much a victim of the patriarchy as women. So I think it is that it's just women undervaluing themselves and feeling very insecure. So a lot of the time it's us bigging each other up. So that's I think is the big. And then the next thing is workwear, uncomfortable workwear, and we all struggle. So that I'm just sick of people. No, I'm not sick of it, but I'm sick of it because they shouldn't have to be asking, you know, where can I buy comfortable trousers? Where can I buy this? Where can I buy that? And there are brands out there that are excellent, but the price is just extortionate. Yeah, and that's my issue, is a lot of these women, you know, struggle to put fuel in their cars and put food on the table, and they're not going to want to spend 150, £180 on a pair of trousers. It's just, or you know, we all know that it's worth the money, but if you haven't got the money, what can you do? And that's the other thing I don't miss about maintenance gardening, is relying on my van, and you know, if it broke down, that's it. That's my job gone for the week, plus the money I have to spend on fixing it. Because you never, of course, can get a decent van, can you? Just get some crap ape from some secondhand thing of holding itself together for £500. So yeah, I don't miss that at all.
Is there a size thing as well with, I mean, this always feels like a terrible question, but
No, not at
I
all.
th is there a size thing with the garden wear as well?
Well, the problem with women's wear is that we, you know, women, men, when you buy a pair of trousers, you buy a 32 waist and a 32 leg or whatever. With women, we're size 10, 12, 14, whatever. And those sizes are based on a classic hourglass figure, which women don't have these days, because we don't have the small waist because of the way that we exercise differently, or we exercise more. And, you know, we're just differently built. Women don't have the waist that they had back in the 50s. So, on top of that, dress sizes change. So I'm a size 20. I'm not ashamed of that. I have worked hard and eaten a lot of buns to get to a size 20. But I can be a size 18 in one shop and a size 24 in another, because shops fiddle with the sizes to make you feel happier about yourself. So you have, this is the problem. So you end up trying buying things and just going for the misery of, well, this fit, you know. Trousers are particularly hard on women, because we need a high back so that when we bend down, our ass doesn't hang out. We need to have a waist, we need to have hips. But then women are, again, are all different shapes as well. I was chatting to a friend about it, because I know that the issue is, you know, there's going to be no silver bullet. I'm well aware of that, because women's bodies are, you know, very different. She was saying to me that we maybe well look into the people that build clothes for people in wheelchairs, because they make clothes that are adaptable, that can be changed and altered. That might be the bullet, the silver bullet. Yeah, and of course, with my background in fashion retail, you know, I've worked with this all my life, and worked. I used to work run a shop called Evans, the outside shop. So, and again, you know, you'd be well aware of how difficult it is to find decent clothes for women, and obviously plus size women. I mean, I'm speaking for myself as a plus size woman, but equally, women that are small or thin, you know, have struggles. So,
I think
unless
like
you're down a
footwear as well
12,
is a thing as well.
yeah.
I don't know what it is about footwear in particular, and I think there is an argument for clothing as well, but footwear seems to have just completely flooded the marketplace at the moment. There seems to be a new garden footwear brand out every week.
Yeah, and my feet are damaged from years, 20 years of wearing, you know, cheap. I used to wear rigger boots, and of course you have to wear steel toe caps as well most of the time. Or I did move to Crocs occasionally. Don't judge me. So yeah, I used to wear rigger boots, but I do remember having to drive around the country trying to find them in my size, because they wouldn't, you couldn't get any smaller than a six. So, but yeah, they did damage my feet, you know, d without a doubt. Not the Maybe the silly shoes I wore in my 20s as well, but you know. But yeah, no, I agree. It is really hard to find the right shoe, because you need a shoe. It's not the sort of shoe that you'd have for hiking. You need the flexibility. You need to be able to bend and crouch in it, but it also needs to be strong. And you know, so
Not easy, is
yeah,
it? Not easy,
no.
is it?
If
Have
I
you
get it right,
found?
I'll be a millionaire, mate,
Oh, well, I was
won't
going to say there's a gap in the market, obviously, for
I?
affordable but good quality, I don't know,
Yes.
garden clothing anyway, isn't
America and Germany seem to do it, so
there?
why can't we?
Anyway, let's move on to another point that you're arguably incredibly famous for, and this is the plastic grass
Oh God, yes.
thing. I mean, obviously, I think we're all more aware
of it generally, I think. But you, I mean, you still see it with abandon kind of everywhere, really, don't you? And one of our neighbours has had it put in recently. And it's funny because I was looking at your Twitter feed and you've shared it on Instagram as well, that one of your neighbours has as well. And I kind of, I've been doing a similar thing, kind of, you know, curtain twitching, watching it. Not really curtain twitching, just curtains full open. But
full open, judging. Because
you don't want to, because I think there are things, and you had it yourself, didn't you?
Yeah.
So you're speaking from experience.
Bitter experience. And just don't want people to make the mistake that I made. So to give people a bit of background. So I was taken in by, it was Easy Grass, or Sleazy Grass, as I like to call it. They put an installation in our local shopping centre, and you know, garden designer, I was very excited because I thought, at last, it's looking like something, you know, looking like real grass. I remembered I just bought a little bit to go under my hot tub. God, even worse. Neither of which I have now. Can't afford to run a hot tub now. That was it. And then it was just somebody called me out on social media and said, you know how bad that is for the environment. And I was a bit like, do you tell me what to do? Like people say to me. But then I researched it and got a bit obsessed by it. And I still am, and just realised how horrific it looks. And I just think aesthetically, it's not very nice. You know, it's just sort of ersatz grass, really. It's quite interesting too, because it was invented by Monsanto, who now Bayer.
Was it
funny that, isn't it? And I understand how people get to it, and this is the issue that we have with the whole plastic grass thing, is the people that choose it don't have the knowledge. We're not taught gardening at school, which is why I love what the Skinny Jean Gardener is doing. You know, he's going around educating kids about gardening. If we had more of that, if this was back on the syllabus, I was taught gardening, I was taught rural science at school, but it isn't taught anymore. So, you know, people don't have this basic knowledge about soil. And I do specialize in doing garden designs for new builds, because again, it's my passion to design small gardens for real people. I don't do big poncy ones. You know, front and center of all of my designs is getting the soil right first, and once you get soil right, the rest of it falls into place. And of course, these new builds are built on terrible soil, postage stamp gardens. I mean, my neighbour, who I've not met yet, it's not moved in yet, who's laid it, I mean, the pork is a north facing garden on the size of 3 meters by 4 meters. No wonder they've chosen plastic grass, because they probably didn't know any better. But if they'd had the knowledge and realised how wonderful the soil is here, we're on green sand, it's very rich, very well draining soil here, they wouldn't have gone that way. So as I'm trying, I know when I started out, I was quite judgmental and I would really attack people, but I'm trying, I've made a bit of a resolution this year to be more careful about what I say to people, to not judge and not, because it just doesn't work. It just makes people angry, and that doesn't make friends or influence people. So it's very hard, because it's, I find it really hard to be nice. So I'm trying to sort of hopefully I've got a project up in Norwich, which is where we're going to do a garden makeover. So the client, they've got in touch with me and said they want to rip it up and replace it. So I'm going to hopefully use it as a case study to show that you can, you know, replace it in an ecological and economic way. The majority of people think that people choose it for maintenance reasons, and actually it's a status symbol. It grew exponentially, sales in lockdown, because people weren't going on holiday, and they wanted to recreate that sort of hotel in Dubai where they used to go, kind of feel all that Love Island feel. And Mrs. Hinch, I don't know if you've heard of Mrs. Hinch, she's the influencer. So actually I have a Facebook alter ego. So I went to, she's just my secret alter ego. I'm in all of these groups, and they actually really love the maintenance, because they love Mrs. Hinch and her cleaning, and actually they share tips and hints, and the men talk about the power tools and which power tool have you got for sucking it up. They get these pressure brushes and things, and they like to share, you know, the stuff that they can use to, because if dogs are on it, the smell is horrendous when they defecate on it. You can get these grass scented bleaches to clean it. And they just actually really love the maintenance, because they love cleaning their houses. I'm a massive slut, so I hate cleaning my house. The thought of, you know, hoovering the garden as well as the house fills me with absolute horror. Why would you want to do that? But each to their own, I guess.
I suppose. I don't know what the, you know, truth be told, I don't know. I can't say that I've looked at the cost of them, presumably, I mean, I don't know. You must.
They start at about £3,000 for an average garden. So an average new build garden is about 50 metres squared, and it's about £3,000 to do that. But that's the sort of, you know, the average. You can get it for cheaper. You can go to Wilko's and flop it out yourself, or you can get a full on Mayfair, which is the most expensive one that Sleazy Grass does, and spend £5,000. And you can also spend £250 a quarter getting them to come and clean it for you.
Wow. I mean,
can you imagine what kind of gardener you could employ? You know, that's the thing. And that's why I try to persuade people. So I did a toxic turf report, which you can access on my website. So it's free. So if you go onto my website, capabilitycharlotte.com, and it's got Time for Turf, you can download it and show it to people. But I went through all of the arguments one by one and found an answer to them. So, for example, the maintenance, you know, you could pay a gardener for the cost of the plastic death carpet. They last between 5 and 15 years, but 15 years is the absolute maximum, and that's if it's kept and maintained very carefully, you know, if you're paying Sleazy Grass to come. So usually it's between 5 and 8, really. So you could pay a gardener to do it for you for all that time.
You hear, I don't know, I mean, I'm sure there must be truth in this, but how the heat affects them, just how the heat heats them up, and you hear about all these injuries of dogs and children, whatever. I presume there's a lot of truth in that, isn't there?
Yes. So there have been a few studies. I'm just trying to remember the study offhand. I can't pluck it from my brain, but I think it was one done in Australia. So obviously it's a different kind of weather, but there is anecdotal evidence. So where people have laid, you know, thermometers over, and it's the difference is extraordinary. I mean, it almost double the heat temperature. So, I mean, it's a hard surface, so it will almost undoubtedly contribute to urban heat island effect, as would concrete or hard. And that's the other argument. People say, well, it's better than concrete, but then why is it one or the other? Why can't it be a real lawn or a perennial border? And, you know, companies now, there's a company that I use quite often for my designs. It's now doing a species rich turf. So you can actually order a ready-made turf full of clover and daisies to do all that. So
that's the thing, isn't it? I think that there is this presumption, as you say, is that it's that or the other. But I think when you think about the gardens that undoubtedly that you've seen, I've seen, that we've all seen, that are patio gardens that are almost fuller than a garden with a conventional long border and all this kind of stuff, because they're doing everything in containers.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't know.
And I can't tell you how many gardens I've gone to that has said, oh, I'm doing a low maintenance garden, it's all gravel and containers, and I go, do you know how high maintenance that
more
is?
Maintenance, good lord.
Somebody on LinkedIn just shared a gravel garden and said that, and I thought, clearly you're not a maintenance gardener, because and we had a chat about it in the Wigs group actually the other day, because I shared this particular garden and said, does anyone remember the pain of weeding a gravel garden? With sore knees and the scraped fingers from just
There's no quick way to do it, is there? That's the,
I mean, I love Beth Chatto's garden, but that's an incredibly high maintenance garden.
Yeah, of course. And as part of a you know, an oast garden or whatever, as part of a garden is different, isn't it? But as an entirely I don't envy anyone with an entirely gravel garden.
No, I have designed one that was back in my early days, but that was because the client flat out refused to have soil or lawn, and we used hogging, which was the first time I was introduced to hogging. I'm now addicted to it, but hogging is quite good because for people that don't know, it's a sort of self-binding gravel which has gravel, sand and clay in it, so it binds, and you can plant in it too because the clay holds the plants, and it's the sort of the least worst hard landscaping option out there because it's a byproduct of the quarrying industry. But so that isn't too bad because it's compacted, it's not quite so bad to weed. But I must say, I wouldn't do a garden like that again. It's quite interesting, some of the gardens you do that you think, oh, I wouldn't design like that again.
It's funny when you must look back at designs and think either how far I've come or you also gain inspiration thinking, oh, I haven't done anything like that for a while.
Yeah, it's true, actually. It's funny you should say that, Adam, because I was writing a new lecture actually about my life as a garden designer. It sounds really pretentious, doesn't it? So I was going back through my, and I found
you've had a life as a garden designer.
I suppose I have, really. Yeah, 2 decades. Oh, I can't tell. I still know nothing.
Oh no,
still learning. You're still learning. God. And I look back at the first design I did, and it was like raised sleeper beds and gravel and some pergolas. And I thought, oh God, I wouldn't do that again. But, yeah.
So, well, I've got some more questions for you, but before we get on to that, if anyone doesn't either follow you on all the various different platforms that you're on or know about your website, where can people find you?
Just type Capability Charlotte into any of the things. So I'm sort of on TikTok. I don't understand it. Do you understand it?
I'm on there and I post things across there from that I've posted on Instagram, but yeah. I'm more of a scroller into the night on TikTok than I am posting.
Yes, I use Instagram for pretty pictures. I use Twitter to argue with people, Facebook for my friends, and LinkedIn to sort of lobby businesses. So I'm on all of those.
Right, let's get back to the plan. I've got three questions for you. Mm-hmm. One question that's from me, one question that's been posed by the guest that was on previous to you, mm-hmm. and then something special at the end. So I'm going to start with the first question. What is one plant that you always struggle to grow and just cannot get along with?
Oh, gosh, so many. I'm really, funny enough, let's be topical as we're in the depths of winter. Yeah. Winter aconites. I just cannot get it to take. I've bought them bulbs. I've bought them in the green. I've planted hundreds of them. I can't tell you how many squirrels and slugs I must have fed with them. So, that one I would just dream to have,
A swathe of them.
Wave of yellow, winter aconites.
Winter aconites, interesting.
That's a struggle. Anyone got any tips? I'm on green sand. Send them in.
So the second question has been posed by the previous guest, which is the queen of pests and diseases, amongst other things, Pippa Greenwood. Actually, the question is not about pests and diseases.
Pippa, so I thought she was going to ask me about pests. Yeah, I'll go back to right then.
No. So the question is, what's the best bit of advice that you would give to a new gardener that you don't know and you don't know anything much about? So you don't know what their garden's like or anything. What's some general good advice for a new gardener?
Mulch, and then mulch again. Go right to the beginning. Start with the soil. Know your soil before you do anything. That is my advice.
Great. Good. Yes. Lovely. And the third question is actually quite cruel, I think, because I'm asking you in the same way that Pippa has left a question for you. I'd like you to leave a question for the next guest, but also I would like you to answer it yourself.
Okay. If you could do your gardening career all over again, what would you do?
Okay. So what would you do differently?
I really regret when I did my diploma, you have to do 100 hours of
community service.
How did you know? Oh, God, menopause brain. you have to do 100 hours of work experience. And I really regret not working in a plant nursery. Because I've spent the rest of my career sort of chasing up with my plant knowledge, because I used to cheat at the plant ident, so I was very good at cheating. I just can't remember. I don't have a capacity for remembering normal people's names, let alone Latin names. So I would have loved to have got my plant knowledge up a lot better. And the best way is by working for a nursery, because they're just absolute oracles, aren't they?
Yeah.
Of what they do. They know their plants backwards. So that would be mine.
If all of that has piqued your interest, then you can find out more from Charlotte by following her on Instagram at CapabilityCharlotte and also through her website CapabilityCharlotte.com. Join me again next week, where I'll be in conversation with someone else from the world of plants. Until then, do make sure to rate and review on your podcast platform of choice. You can also see what I'm up to in my garden by following me on Instagram at ViewFromThePottingBench or visiting my website, viewfromthepottingbench.com. See you again next week.